Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, the title will explain everything for you. You see, this is a little bit of a podcast, and it has a little bit of animation. Add those two little bits, and you pretty much get the Animation Podcast. But specifically, it talks about the latest news that happened this week. So, for today's podcast, we are going to be looking into Pixar and how they decided that 2020 onward, they don't want to make any more sequels, well, at least in the foreseeable future. Then we will discuss how Anomalisa is no longer popular. Then afterwards, we will be looking into The Killing Joke that added 300 additional theaters for the one night of its premiere on the big screen. Then afterwards, we will look into this phenomenal-looking Studio Ghibli exhibit. And finally, we will end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. So for our first story, this is something that really made big news and a lot of people paid attention to it. And a lot of it received, you know, a lot of joy because lately this is going to be regarding about the future of Pixar. Now, when you look into Pixar during this decade, you'll realize that they really put a lot of emphasis on sequels. In fact, the grand majority of their movies released in this decade, including the upcoming ones, are pretty much nothing but sequels. When you think about it, there are Toy Story 3, there are Cars 2, and then afterwards, after Cars 2, there would be Monsters University, followed by Finding Dory, which has just been released. Then you will get Cars 3, then Toy Story 4, and Incredibles 2. So basically, that's pretty much the amount of sequels that you got. So basically, throughout the 2010s, you got 7 sequels. And as for original films, well, at the most, there have only been 4 original Pixar films released in this decade. We already got Brave, we already got Inside Out, we already got The Good Dinosaur, and then soon we will have Coco, and that's it. But apparently, when we're going to be entering the 2020 decade, things might change a little bit. We might not get any more sequels afterwards. In an interview with Entertainment Weekly, Pixar president Jim Morris stated that apparently after The Incredibles 2, they do not have a single sequel planned out. They said that everything after Toy Story and The Incredibles is an original right now. So basically they're not going to be doing any more. Well, I'm not going to say they're not going to be doing any more, but from what they're seeing in the future, what they have planned out, it doesn't seem like they got any sequels. They're all going to be original films. Continuing on what Jim Morris said, my source here from IGN, that Pixar's next sequel, Cars 3, released in June next year, which will be followed by Toy Story 4 in 2018 and The Incredibles 2 the year after. The studio's original plan was to make an original every year and a sequel every other year, but the scheduling didn't work as planned. That said, Morris noted that Pixar will start, will still have a total of 7 sequels in a spate of 21 originals, following Disney's acquisition of the studio 10 years ago. And as well, it seems that it also mentioned that Pete Docter right now is currently working on another original animated feature, which, according to the scheduling, we might not get it until somewhere in 2020 or maybe even 2021. So we'll just have to wait and see what they have planned. But yeah, you know, honestly, I'm all for this. And, you know, we'll have to be very honest. Like, throughout this entire decade, in terms of its sequels, it was only Toy Story 3 that really, you know, made a big splash. It was the only one that seemed to be as good or arguably better than the movies of the past decade. Like Toy Story 3 was such a phenomenal film, but then afterwards when you get like some of the other sequels, like Cars 2 was pretty bad, like there's no denying on that. And then like Monsters University wasn't really all that great. And then you got Finding Dory, which is still a pretty legitimate movie, but it's just like, it's like a bit of a step down from every other Pixar film. Like, it's still really good, but it's not like Pixar masterpiece, if you know what I mean. So, of course, and even nowadays, like in the past decade, you look at Pixar, like they were the masters of animation. Like every time a Pixar movie was released, it was a huge event. I remember there were lineups to go see movies like The Incredibles and Finding Nemo and WALL-E, Up, Ratatouille, and all those movies. Like there were huge lineups. But nowadays, Pixar wasn't really, like, they're no longer in their prime, and you could definitely tell. And right now, like, the ones who really are the masters of animation is, once again, Walt Disney Animation Studios, now that they're releasing massive hits and, like, some of the best animated movies of the decade, like Frozen, Wreck-It Ralph, Tangled, Zootopia. You know, they're releasing all those movies, and, you know, it really got them on top. It's really, like, what the mainstream audience, what everybody around the world is keeping an eye on for, like, top quality animated features. It's no longer really Pixar. Though, like, we still do, but our expectations is a tad bit lower than before. And the fact that, like, now when they're going to be entering upon the 2020 decade, it is nice to know that, you know, they're going to be entering a new era of Pixar films, and maybe we can go back to the old Pixar from the 2000s, where they're going to be making phenomenal animated features that are completely original, not based on anything. It's not a follow-up to anything. It's not a, you know, it's not a sequel. Well, yeah, no, not a sequel. Like, well, I already said it's not like a follow-up, but it's not based on anything. It is 100% purely original, and it's nice to see that. You know, like, when you think about the last decade, they released a total of, like, what? Like, they released Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, The Incredibles, Cars, Ratatouille, WALL-E, Up. They've released 7 original movies. Not a single sequel, nothing based on anything was found. They're all purely original, and some of the best, and, like, all of them can be considered the best animated features of that decade. They truly are that amazing, and they're pretty much sandwiched between 2 Toy Story sequels that are from different decades. Like, Toy Story 2 was released in 1999, and then Toy Story 3 was released in 2010. So if Pixar would be able to go back to that era of making nothing but original movies, then I'm all for it. I would love to see them do more. However, with that said, does that mean that there would be no more Pixar sequels, period? Absolutely not. Like, the thing is that at this point, with how Pixar is working on their animated films, and let's say right now that they're currently working on, like, what they got scheduled, like, for a while. Like, if they are starting to plan a new animated feature, chances are the latest would be, like, this is a movie that's going to have a 2022 release. So from what they could see, it's pretty much from, like, pretty much from now up to maybe 2022 or, like, just 2020. So, like, on to the next decade, they can't really see farther. Like, maybe there's a chance in, like, later on in the decade, like 2023, 2024, 2025, or 2026, they could actually release a sequel. Maybe they're going to release, like, Toy Story 5, or maybe WALL-E 2, or Finding Marlin, or something like that, you know? Like, maybe they will make a sequel. It's just that what they have planned now, they're not going to release another sequel. What they're basically saying is that, they're not really planning any more sequels after The Incredibles 2, but that's pretty much from what they can tell. Pretty much after The Incredibles 2, we're just gonna have a long period where it's nothing but original movies. pretty much with new characters and new adventures and like pretty much completely original Pixar films that hopefully they could get up into the ranks of something like Inside Out, you know? But I will say this, however, that if they are going to make more original films, I do hope that they could find some new blood that can continue on the Pixar tradition, because the worst case scenario that I can imagine is that Pixar might end up being the next Studio Ghibli. And what I mean by that is that when you look at Studio Ghibli, the reason why they're not making any more Studio Ghibli films now is because they have yet to find someone who can pretty much get up into the same ranks as Hayao Miyazaki and Isao Takahata and, like, you know, make more movies for Studio Ghibli. Like, often they can be close. Like, there were times that they were close to getting that, you know? They had, unfortunately, I do apologize, I forgot his name, but they had the guy directing Whisper of the Heart, but unfortunately he passed away after that movie. And, like, they had Hiromasa Yonebayashi, the director of The Secret World of Arrietty and When Marnie Was There. And Yonebayashi did a phenomenal job. Like, he was really close to making something that can almost be equivalent to something made by Hayao Miyazaki or Isao Takahata, but unfortunately, he didn't really stay all that long at Studio Ghibli. Like, you know, he would come back from time to time, but not really making feature films. And that's kind of the reason why Studio Ghibli is not really making any more features. Well, not necessarily the main reason, but it is a big factor, you know? It's because they don't have, like, new blood. They don't have new talents that can continue on the legendary legacy. And this is something that I worry about Pixar. I mean, they can't always rely, like, they can't rely forever on having people like John Lasseter, Andrew Stanton, Brad Bird, Pete Docter, and Lee Unkrich to go and make their movies. Now, like, if they're going to make an original animated feature, like, I know Lee Unkrich is going to go and make Coco, and apparently Pete Docter is making another original movie. I cannot wait to see those movies. Like, they did a phenomenal job last time, so I'm sure they're going to do a phenomenal job with this. But they can't always rely on that. And that's kind of a problem with Pixar right now, is to pretty much find new talent. Because when you think about the original movies that were released this decade, like, well, at least the ones that are released right now, like Brave, Inside Out, and The Good Dinosaur, the reason why Brave and The Good Dinosaur didn't necessarily work out as well as something like Inside Out is because they were trying with new directors. They originally tried Bob Peterson and Brenda Chapman to be Pixar directors, but unfortunately, that didn't necessarily work out, and they had to find replacements like Peter Son for The Good Dinosaur, and what was it, Mark Osborne? It's Mark something. It's not Mark Osborne, but hold on a sec. Let me just double check here. I believe it's, I know it's Mark something. I believe, Mark Andrews, yes. So pretty much, like, they had to be replaced by Mark Andrews and, Peter Son. So they had to be the new directors. And what ended up happening is that those movies are good, but they're not as good as the other Pixar films. And sometimes, and often, like, they had a pretty bad reputation. Although Brave's reputation as a movie, like a standalone movie, is pretty good. Like, Merida is among the Disney princesses. And, you know, like, people enjoy the film. Like, they do look at it in a positive light. But unfortunately for The Good Dinosaur, there are some people that really hate it. And it was, unfortunately, Pixar's first ever flop. So the thing is that they really do have a hard time to find new talent that can, you know, continue the Pixar legacy. But unfortunately, if they're going to solely rely on the main five directors, then Pixar could be in trouble. Because if they ended up leaving, then what's going to happen to Pixar? Like, they need to find new great directors, and hopefully in the next decade we could find some new fresh directors that could be an heir to the main five. So, I'm on board on this, but I do hope that they do take the right step in order for Pixar to continue its strong legacy. People see even to this day, some people look at Pixar as the masters of animation, especially with the movies that they've done in the past decade. And I would love it for them to continue this legacy, but they have to make sure they take the right steps. And I will say, making more original movies after Incredibles 2 is definitely a good step. And I do wish the best of luck for any new director who will step up at Pixar and make something phenomenal. Or even, you never know, maybe there are going to be some that could make a redemption. Like, maybe Peter Son is going to release the next giant hit, or maybe even Mark Andrews is going to make the next Pixar classic. You never know, but we'll just have to wait and see after The Incredibles 2 is released in 2019. And let's hope for a new great era in the next decade for Pixar. Now, for our next story, this is something that it really makes you think about a movie that nobody seems to talk about anymore. It had its light of day during the award season, and then suddenly it's gone. And what I mean by that is last year's Anomalisa. And the reason why I want to talk about it is because apparently in an interview during the Karlovy Vary International Film Festival, Charlie Kaufman was actually honored with the President's Award, but when he spoke out about how things have been going after Anomalisa, he felt like things haven't been great. And let me just read you this, coming from my source here at The Playlist. He said, "We did things completely outside of everybody's system because I couldn't get anything made, and I got this thing into production, and no one knew it was happening. We weren't doing it by secret or choice. It's just because no one gave a crap." And he continued. There was this great passage. Like, he continued on saying that, how he pretty much feels about the current situation with Anomalisa. He said, "You know, I'm disappointed it got these great reviews and it didn't do any business. It doesn't make me dislike the movie. I still really like the movie and I'm still glad we made it. But I was thinking when Paramount took it on, I thought, well, okay, this is going to make me some money and this is going to help my career. I don't think it hurt my career, but I don't think it gave it the thing where it's like, okay, this guy is viable, we can make a movie and people will go and see it. And I think especially because the reviews were so extraordinarily good, because with Cinedoce, I don't know what that is, it was divided. There were great reviews and then other people hated it. It's like you could sort of see why people won't go to it because of that. That was like, why this time? Why this time? And I don't know the answer and I never will, but it's frustrating for me to get that regard." And you know, when you're thinking, like, when you think about a movie like Anomalisa, it is technically true that, like, it was a movie that just happened. Like, it had a bit of its light of day during the award season, and then it disappeared. But, you know, looking into this piece, it really did make me think about, the independent films during the Oscar season. Like, whenever an animated feature would be nominated for Best Animated Film, like, you would hear about it, and then after the awards, like, it's gone. It disappeared like that. It's pretty much not, it's especially not easy nowadays for an animated feature to be nominated for Best Animated, for an animated film, an independent animated film, to be nominated for Best Animated Feature, and then to continue having a legacy right afterwards. You know, it really can be tough at times. And that's mostly because, like, of course, with mainstream, like, with the mainstream movies made by, like, Disney, Pixar, Fox, DreamWorks, Sony, and all those companies, like, often it could be very easy for them to be overshadowed. I mean, like, when you look at Anomalisa, Like, that was a movie that was released right at the end of the year, and then it was also released in January. And it actually made very little money at the box office, so much so that even Norm of the North made more money than Anomalisa at the box office. In a way, it was pretty much an animated film that happened, you know? Like, you heard the news about it, it seemed to be the toast of festivals, and then it got a release, and then it got all those nominations at, like, the Golden Globes, the Annies, the Oscars, and all that stuff, and then afterwards, it disappeared. No one ever talks about it. But why is that specifically? But honestly, when thinking about it, like, when I look into Anomalisa, it is true that it is a completely different movie. For one, it is stop motion, and usually stop motion films, it's very rare when they would often get popular. And often, like, when you hear about stop motion films, usually they would be made by Leica, they would be made by Aardman, or they would have a big name director attached to it, like either Tim Burton or Henry Selick. But with this one, it's just Charlie Kaufman, who's mostly well known for being John Malkovich. So at least in an animation standpoint, this is pretty much his first time coming in. Like, we don't know how he would be with animation, but it seems that he was pretty phenomenal, and especially with a movie that is rather different and it's rather unique. But I will say, I did hear usually some of the complaints that some people would say that with Anomalisa, there are some who can be a bit confused to why this is even animation in the first place, because it's so down to earth. The only things that are, like, extraordinary that needed animation are just the use of, having Tom Newland voice every other character that is not Lisa or Michael, and, like, everybody having the same face. Like, it makes sense of the use of it, but, like, for the most part, it's so down to earth that you don't necessarily need it. But honestly, the fact that, like, it did get nominated for an Oscar and then it disappeared, like, there can be ways for independent animated features to actually get nominated at the Oscars and then continue to have a legacy. Like, there are some independent films that we still remember today and are often considered classics because it got nominated at the Oscar and, like, it made major buzz, is because, like, they would often have a massive reputation. Like, when you think about movies like The Triplets of Belleville or The 2010 Illusionist, that is because it is associated with a very well-known animator, Sylvain Chaumet. Or when you think about movies like The Secret of Kells or Song of the Sea, those movies still hold up today and people are still talking about it because of the reputation of Cartoon Saloon, which right now is currently the most acclaimed animation studio in Ireland, and people are now currently keeping an eye and are anticipating of their next animated feature, The Breadwinners, which even Angelina Jolie came in to be one of the producers. And, and especially with Anomalisa, it just seems like suddenly it appeared and then disappeared. But, I just want to mention this right now. Anomalisa is not the only one. If you guys remembered, there was also Boy in the World. You know, some of you may not remember this, but it was the Brazilian animated feature that was very Don Hirschfeld-esque. That, you know, it appeared and it got, like, the same thing. It got nominated for all those Annies and Oscars and all that kind of stuff and then disappeared. I mean, like, when you think about it nowadays, who talks about Boy in the World right now? It's pretty much, like, it kind of disappeared in obscurity so quickly. And, like, you barely even see it on DVD. Like, you barely see it on DVD shelves. It's like, I don't think anybody is in a hurry to go and get Boy in the World on DVD or Blu-ray or to get it digitally and stuff like that, you know? I don't think there's any rush for it. And, thinking about it, like, with everything that Charlie Kaufman said, you know, like, the reason why he's disappointed, and I guess with the kind of expectations he wanted with Anomalisa, I was thinking that maybe he was hoping that with Anomalisa, it would be the next Fantastic Mr. Fox. Now, rather if Fantastic Mr. Fox would count as an independent movie can be a bit debatable because, yes, it was released by, it was released by 20th Century Fox, but it's a little bit of the same thing with Anomalisa, you know? It's a stop-motion animated film. It was directed by a very highly acclaimed artistic director, which in this case is Wes Anderson, and this is his first time jumping into animation. And what happened after the Oscars, it went greatly for Wes. Like, Fantastic Mr. Fox, after the Oscars, it got a lot more popular. It's now a part of the Criterion Collection. And even some people are even regarding Fantastic Mr. Fox as one of the greatest stop-motion animated films of all time, right next to stuff like Coraline and The Nightmare Before Christmas. And it really helped the popularity of Wes Anderson to go make more movies. And, like, with the talks of him making another stop-motion animated feature film with dogs, like, people are totally excited for it. You know, people are anticipating for it. But with Anomalisa, no one seemed to care. No one seemed to pay attention. And honestly, I can imagine it could be because of the limitation of its audience. Like, with Fantastic Mr. Fox, it is a family film. You know, like, kids and adults can equally enjoy it, and that's mostly because it's already based on a popular book, which is Roald Dahl's Fantastic Mr. Fox. So, with that said, it was easy for it to get some attention. But with Anomalisa, it's an original animated feature. The tone is very, like, it's way down, very down to earth. It is, like, very, like, in the way that it tries to build up, it's very realistic. And it's an R-rated animated feature, so already it really limited its audience. Like, sure, it has, you know, it has a stop-motion sex scene, but that's not going to be enough to bring in the audience. I mean, like, when you think about, like, sure, like, there are more R-rated animated features coming up, like Sausage Party, but that one is a comedy. That one actually has some big-name celebrities attached to it, like Seth Rogen. But Anomalisa, there are only three actors in there, and none of them are really A-list celebrities. Not a lot of them are really, big popular names. You know, it is rather unfortunate that nobody does talk about Anomalisa, because, like, it is a phenomenal film. I even got it on Blu-ray, but, yeah, I can understand. Sadly, I could understand that, unfortunately, it kind of faded out into a bit of obscurity, and nobody really cared much about it. Like, the only thing that people know about is just that it got nominated at the Oscar, but everybody knew for a fact that it would lose to Inside Out. Like, everybody pretty much expected that, you know? But yeah, like, unfortunately, Anomalisa has to disappear in that wave of Oscar-nominated animated features that nobody really talks about anymore. Nobody talks about Anomalisa, nobody talks about Boy in the World, nobody talks about Chico and Rita, or A Cat in Paris. You know, like, it happens, sadly. And, you know, like, I do wish the best of luck for Charlie Kaufman to go and, you know, try to get some projects out there, but sadly, like, stuff like this happens, you know? Like, not all of them are going to be major hits, and not all great animated features are going to stick with audiences and, like, stay in the record books. So, it's a really interesting analogy when you think about the popularity of Anomalisa now, but, you know, it's kind of, it's pretty sad, but hopefully one day, Anomalisa will see its light of day. Like, one day, we'll see. So for our next story, what we got, of course, is I'm pretty much going to state this. This is pretty much the most anticipated animated Batman movie ever made. I'm talking about The Killing Joke. And as you guys know, pretty much the anticipation is so big that even Fathom Events is going to have a one-night screening for The Killing Joke. So pretty much, like, everybody can get a chance to see this movie on the big screen before it gets released on DVD and Blu-ray. But however, the demand seems to be so big that they're even adding a lot more theaters into it. And what I am talking about, of course, is that because of so many fan requests for The Killing Joke to appear close to their screening, Fathom Entertainment decided to add in 300 additional theaters around the United States to have this one-day debut of Batman The Killing Joke. And right now, there are a total of over 1,000 1,000 cinemas across the U.S. that are going to show Fathom Events. They're not showing Fathom Events. They're actually showing that movie. And if you guys don't know why is there so much hype about The Killing Joke, well, as you guys know, this is actually an adaptation of one of the most beloved, one of the most highly acclaimed Batman comics of all time, the 1998 Killing Joke by Alan Moore. And on top of that, the voice actors from the Batman animated series are actually coming back to this. They're bringing back Kevin Conroy as Batman. They're bringing back Mark Hamill as the Joker. And they're also bringing back Tara Strong as Barbara Gordon, aka Batgirl. And on top of that, they also got Bruce Timm, who's pretty much like the big head of all the past direct-to-DVD Batman animated series. Like, they got Bruce Timm to be the executive producer for this. So pretty much they got all the right people doing this movie. And on top of that, with Fathom Events, they are also going to put in... They're also going to make a special introduction from Mark Hamill with a never-before-seen documentary about Mark Hamill and what is said here from my source at comingsoon.net, a never-before-seen documentary about the actor and his passion for this project. And also, after the movie, they're going to add in a behind-the-scenes look of how they brought the memorable, crazy song that the Joker would sing on, like, how they brought that song onto the big screen. If you don't know which one I'm talking about, it's the one that the Joker would sing this song about being crazy while Commissioner Gordon is in a ride that the concept is to turn him insane. That's basically the whole goal. And the one thing, I'm speaking about this for myself, is that I am curious if this is going to be much more than just the United States. Is Fathom Events going to bring this in other places, like in Mexico, in Canada? Because technically, like, even though they advertise that this is going to be more of a U.S. thing, it is not impossible to think that they would bring it to the U.S. or they would bring it to Mexico or they would bring it to other places in North America. Because I remember Fathom Events was in charge of the Iron Giant Signature Edition when they wanted to bring that into theaters. And I remember I actually managed to get a chance to watch that during my birthday. So imagine how awesome of a birthday that I got, that I would pretty much end the day off by watching the Iron Giant Signature Edition on the big screen. It was amazing. Like, I really had a blast. And it really was amazing. And I seriously cannot wait for the release of the Iron Giant Signature Edition on Blu-ray. Like, I got my eyes on the Ultimate Collector's Edition, trust me. And with that said, like, honestly, I would love to take a shot at watching The Killing Joke on the big screen, because, like, I'll have to admit, I actually really bought into the hype, and I actually went and bought The Killing Joke myself, like, reading the book to see what it's all about. And it's going to be, I feel like it's going to be very fascinating how they're going to bring in The Killing Joke onto the big screen. It's going to be really crazy. Plus the fact that it is going to be the first ever rated R Batman movie, if you don't technically count Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, like the unrated edition that's coming out on DVD and Blu-ray, or I think it just released it, or I think they just released it, or I don't know, but if you don't count that, like, this is gonna be full-on crazy. So I bought into the hype. Like, the comic is like, wow, it is insane. It really is thought-provoking. Like, the scene that seriously grabbed me the most was when the Joker was presenting Commissioner Gordon in a cage, and he talks about how, like, he pretty much treats the average man as a freak show. That is probably the one scene that really sticks to me the most. And, like, yeah, of course there are the panels of, like, you know, the first look at the Joker with all the ha-ha-ha behind him, and also, like, the last panel when you see, like, the Joker making the killing joke himself, and you see the Joker and Batman laughing while there's a car, like, coming towards him, so you don't know what happened to the fate of the Joker. But yeah, like, I really bought into the hype. Now I understand about the killing joke, and I'm pretty excited to see how they're going to bring it up on the big screen. They technically got the right people for it, so let's see if they can really hold it up, and I really want to see it. But if you guys are interested to go see The Killing Joke on the big screen, it's going to be coming out on July 25th, 2016, only on that day at 7:30 p.m. or at 10 p.m. If you want to know if it's going to be appearing at your local theater, then go to Fathom, look onto Fathom Events website to see. However, if you did not get the chance to see it in theaters, you can always get it on DVD and Blu-ray, which will be coming out on August 2nd. So for our next story, this is a tale of how, holy crap, I wish I was in Japan, because they got something really cool going on. And what I am talking about is going to be regarding Studio Ghibli. Now, yes, of course, there are many exhibits going on with Studio Ghibli. You can always go to the famous Ghibli Museum, or you can even go to the house that is meant to be completely recreated of Satsuke and Mei's house from My Neighbor Totoro. You can go visit that. But apparently there seems to be a much larger exhibition that's going to be honoring the release of a movie that they are collaborating, The Red Turtle. And what I am talking about is the exposition called Roppongi Hill. That's going to be at the Roppongi Hills skyscraper, or is actually going on right now. It's like fresh and new. It's something called Ghibli Expo, from Nausicaa to its latest film, The Red Turtle. So this is pretty much honoring everything that they got from Studio Ghibli. But one of the biggest things that they are presenting are all the advertisements, all the posters, everything they used for all the banners, like, every single thing that they used for the marketing, as well as, like, so many different kinds of notes, so many different kinds of, they got a bit of production, you know, production work from some of their previous films, but, in terms of, like, what they have for production, most of it would be focusing on the upcoming film that they have collaborated on, The Red Turtle. And this is on top of many recreated stuff that they have built, like, they brought to life in 3D. Like, you got, like, pretty much you got, like, this giant Totoro that's behind a counter. But at the same time, like, you got this giant scenery from Nausicaa with giant windmills. And this is on top of, like, this, you even got this giant battle cruiser from Nausicaa that looks absolutely phenomenal. And it's, like, it's fully functional. Like, they recreated the giant flying ship from Nausicaa with all the propellers. And, like, you see, like, Like all the little fins on the bottom that's moving. It's phenomenal. Like, it comes to life. It's crazy. And like surrounding it, you see all the different kinds of planes that appear in many of the different Studio Ghibli films, from Porco Rosso to The Wind Rises. It's honestly beautiful. And even on, like, if you go on Cartoon Brew, they actually have a collection of photos showing all the different things that are presented. Like, you see, there's a section where, like, right beside the big Totoro statue, you actually see photos of Hayao Miyazaki and Toshio Suzuki with other people. Like, you see him with Isao Takahata, you see him with Hideaki Anno, you also see him with John Lasseter, and then you just see, you then see this giant wall of nothing but posters and advertisements for all the Studio Ghibli films, and even some production art, like, making those posters. Like, you see the picture of, Princess Mononoke, where you actually see San and right next to the wolf, like you see it with the wolf spirit, like you see that that image, when she's all covered in blood and stuff like that, trying to heal a wound from her mother. And you actually see some of the production art used from it, like all the drawings and stuff like that. And also, you pretty much see concept art and production art done for the Red Turtle. You look at all the banners, you see different kinds of notes and scripts, and my god, and then, like, even all the newspaper clippings, every single freaking newspaper clipping surrounding a wall, it's just insane. And you even get this giant recreation. You could literally get in the cat bus. You can legit get, like, you can relax and sit on a chair in the freaking cat bus. It's beautiful. You even get a recreation of some of the people working there. Like, you even get a recreation of the office of, like, Hayao Miyazaki, of Isao Takahata, and then, like, you even get, like, even the shop looks phenomenal. It looks jam-packed with all different kinds of stuff. It's just amazing. You gotta go on Cartoon Brew to look at these photos. It's just amazing, and it will literally make you envious about not being in Japan right now, because it's crazy. And, taking an excerpt here, the comprehensive exhibit, which includes numerous three-dimensional models and recreations of the Ghibli offices, among with its 2,500 objects on display, is based on the 30th anniversary exhibit that took place last year in Japan, which has been updated with artwork from Dudok DeWitt's film. It's just crazy, and honestly, like, my god, like, I do wish someday, like, we would have a Studio Ghibli exhibit going on, like, elsewhere in the world. Like, I would love to see Studio Ghibli stuff coming in to Montreal, or to come into Los Angeles, or to come into the United States or Canada or whatever. I would love to see that, and, like, it's gonna be a sellout thing. I mean, I've seen art exhibits done for, like, Disney and Pixar as well. Like, I'm sure, like they can do that for Studio Ghibli. One day I would love to see, like, a complete Studio Ghibli exhibit come into North America, because, like, that is absolutely phenomenal. But if you are in Japan, then you can head out right now, once again, at the Roppongi Hills skyscraper and check out the new Ghibli Expo. And finally, we shall now end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. Now, for this Matt's Pick of the Week, I will say this, that we're going to be entering into a subject that I have been in trouble before, not because of, like, my bosses or anything like that, but because of criticism that I've received on YouTube, and this is regarding politics. Now, as you guys may know, politics, it is a huge subject right now, considering we are entering the 2016 U.S. presidential elections of what seems to be right now, like, Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. And the funny thing is that even if I make the smallest mention of of politics, like, for some reason, people would be bashing at me. Like, the biggest case that happened is that the first time that I actually did the animation podcast highlights, when I put it on my YouTube channel, and I would mention how Sony Pictures Animation was the Donald Trump of animation, like, I got criticized by it, not because of anything I said about Sony Pictures Animation, but because of the fact that I compared Sony to Donald Trump. And a lot of people got mad about it, saying, I've seen people saying, I was like, Donald Trump is not that bad. You shouldn't talk about politics. You don't know anything about politics that's going on right now. You should have said it, that Sony is the Hillary Clinton of animation. And it honestly, honestly, I remember when I first saw that, like, it got me concerned. Not because of what I said, but because of the fact that more Trump supporters are coming out of the woodworks, they're coming out of their holes, and they're starting to, they're showing their true colors on the internet. And that is what concerns me, is that there are more Trump supporters out there. And the thing is that they keep criticizing me, and they keep telling me what to do, that, oh, I should not talk about politics. I should only stick to just talking about animated features. Well, guess what? You're not the boss of me. I can talk about whatever I like, and this is perfect. This is a perfect subject to talk about Matt's pick of the week. If you want real politics talk, let's talk about politics with this one. All right, so what I want to talk about for Matt's pick of the week, you may recall that recently there is a recent controversy that Donald Trump has been incurred. Yeah, I know, Donald Trump is in controversy. Oh my god, that's nothing new, right? I mean, he gets into controversy every freaking day. But what I'm talking about, there was this tweet that he posted, pretty much an attack on Hillary Clinton, as usual, talking about how she's a very corrupted politician. But the one thing that really made it controversial was the fact that he used a 6-star to label Hillary Clinton as a, you know, just as a corrupted person. And what really made people mad about it is the fact that he used the 6-pointed star that it's basically the Star of David. There's no denying that. And Trump tried to hide it, and he did delete it, or at least his team, they deleted it and they replaced it with just a circle to say that Hillary Clinton is corrupted. But even right now, he's saying that, oh, I shouldn't have deleted that tweet. I should have taken my stand. And then what happened afterwards was that he tried to make a case to pretty much defend himself for using the Star of David, was that he posted a tweet on Twitter, and there was a picture of pretty much this kid's book of Frozen, and it said, where is the outrage for this Disney book? Is this the Star of David also? Dishonest media hashtag Frozen. And yes, it is true that on this Frozen book, it does have a 6-pointed star that is the Star of David, but it doesn't say that Elsa is corrupted or anything like that. It just says that the book comes with 50 stickers. And that is mostly, and that is pretty much the whole thing, is that how Donald Trump is trying to use Frozen as a way to defend his case of using pretty much putting up an anti-Semitic attack by using the Star of David to label Hillary Clinton as a bad person. Now, the thing is, this is the beauty of Donald Trump. This is really the beauty of Donald Trump, that he proves himself as a horrible monster. You know, the thing is that we don't have to make comparisons to Hitler, because Donald Trump is doing a great job by himself doing that. You know, like, he's already using this, you know, like, the fact that he uses the Star of David to attack on Hillary Clinton. And that's, you know, that's the big difference between Donald Trump's Star of David and Frozen's Star of David. The way that Frozen uses the Star of David is pretty much to advertise the kids' book, to say that there are 50 stickers in there. I don't think that's what Donald Trump did. Donald Trump did not use the Star of David in order to label Hillary Clinton that she has 50 stickers. What Donald Trump did, he used the Star of David for hate in order to label Hillary Clinton that she is a very corrupted politician. And plus the fact that, like, in that banner, you see Hillary Clinton behind, like, a whole bunch of money. Like, it does send in another bad signal that you're using the Star of David, like, the symbol of Jews, and, like, trying to label someone as a very corrupted person with a lot of money. So, yeah, that's another double entendre of anti-Semitism out there. Like, using Jews, like, connecting Jews and money, you know? But, and that's the thing. This is exactly what Hitler did to, you know, to label Jews. Like, he would have, like, this label, like, to put in a giant patch for someone to carry, like, this Star of David, and that it says Jew. Like, this is pretty much a big label to say Jew. And that's pretty much what Donald Trump is using. He's using the Star of David for hate. And that's what makes it feel like he's pulling off a Hitler, is the fact that he's using that star for, like, you know, he's using that star to put in hate on a person, to say that this person is corrupted, to say that this is a bad person, just like what Hitler did when he took that Star of David and he would put it on Jews to say that they are bad people. And you know, like, it's just like what I said, you know, just like what I said, Donald Trump is proving, like, he's doing a good job himself proving that he's basically Hitler. I mean, there was already a controversy beforehand a few months ago, the fact that he had a plan to go and label Muslims, because, like, that's one of the big things about Donald Trump, is that he, like, basically the whole thing with him is that he wants to make Muslims of the 2010s look like the Jews of the 40s. You know, really give them a hard time. He wants them all dead. Like, basically, he wants them all exterminated from the U.S. And, you know, just pretty much have them a hard time. Like, not, like, they're not allowed to have them come into the United States. You know, pretty much label them as bad people. Say that, you know, say that they're, like, Muslims are terrorists, and that they all go Allahu Akbar, explode. And I know the term is technically Allahu Akbar, but that's what a Trump supporter would say. It's like, ah, damn Muslims going Allahu Akbars and going boom, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, like, that's basically the thing, is that you could tell how evil of a person Donald Trump is. Like, you can look at any other news source. Like, maybe I do not have a high knowledge in American politics as much as someone like Bill Maher or Anderson Cooper, but I know what a horrible human being is. And Donald Trump, throughout his entire campaign, is nothing but an entirely horrible human being. The fact, like, how he is so, like, you can tell how he is such a racist, a anti-Semitic. I wouldn't be surprised if he's also homophobic, an absolute sexist. Like, there is nothing good, and there's nothing about him that makes him qualified ever to be the next U.S. president, to pretty much have that much power. Seriously. And the fact that he's bringing Frozen into this to defend his case of how he's using a symbol as hatred, like, he's using a religious symbol for hatred, it's downright embarrassing. In fact, Josh Gad pretty much said it best on his tweet, that Trump using Frozen to make a point about an anti-Semitic star usage is like Pablo Esteban using gummy vitamins to provide to prove that not all drugs are bad. And, you know, there are some truth to this, you know? It's completely ridiculous. And, like, once again, Trump is just completely missing the point to the stupid things that he's saying. And somehow, like, he's getting votes from, like, if you've read about stories about what usually happens in a Trump rally, my God, like they are some of the worst people. It sounds like the scary, like, if you want a real, true, scary story, read up to what happens at a Trump rally. Like, you will not, like, this is literally, you will never find such a wretched hide of scum and villainy. In fact, that's an understatement. That's, you know, that's just saying it, that's just really putting it lightly, because the amount of racism, the amount of anti-Semitism that happens there is really sickening. And the fact that, like, he has all these stupid ideas, the fact that he wants to, like, he wants to build walls between, like, he wants to make a wall on Mexico. He even wants to make a freaking wall over Canada over something like heroin or whatever. Some stupid bullcrap made-up story. And, like, he wants others to pay for it. That, like, he wants other people, he wants Mexico and Canada to pay for his stupid wall. It's like, what are you gonna prove? Like, seriously. Like, Trump is, like, honestly, and going back to with Disney, is that it's not just Josh Gad, but, like, anybody who is associated with Frozen, anybody who worked on Frozen, they feel absolutely embarrassed about it. They feel, they feel embarrassed over the fact that, like, somehow Frozen was trending because of a stupid thing Trump said, and really, like, it's a fact that it's just absolutely stupid. And, like, everybody from animators to directors and all that, and actors, they're all downright embarrassed about how Trump has to bring in Frozen into it. I mean, like, even, I'm sure even Disney themselves are embarrassed, like, they're downright embarrassed that Trump has to reel them in his freaking mess. It's enough that they have to worry about the fact that, like, there could be a possibility that they would have to make a freaking Donald Trump audio animatronic at Walt Disney World in the Hall of Presidents. You know, that's enough of a nightmare right there for Disney. And you know the funny thing, and you know the thing is that I'm actually not against seeing Donald Trump in, like, seeing his image in Walt Disney World. You know, I wouldn't mind that, actually. I would actually love to see, a picture of Donald Trump next to a beautiful woman by his side. Like, have that picture be prominently presented at a Disney attraction. Specifically in the attic scene of the Haunted Mansion. Just so we can see his head disappear, so we can fully understand the scenario of what's going on there. Oh, but I swear to God, man. Like, that's the only place that I would love to see Donald Trump. Like in terms of Walt Disney World, that's the only place where he freaking belongs. Not in the freaking Hall of Presidents. What a freaking what a nightmare that is. There are gonna be more how weird is it that the Hall of Presidents is the scariest attraction at the Magic Kingdom that could even top something like the Haunted Mansion or even, like, one of the big thrill rides like Space Mountain or stuff like that? It's just insane to think about. But I think at the end of the day, like, if there is one thing that I want to say about Donald Trump, like, of course, like, even though, yes, I am Canadian, and, like, we got a brand new leader, like, we just elected Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, and so far, things are going great with the guy. You know, he hasn't screwed up yet. The worst that he has done is that he accidentally elbowed a woman in Parliament. That's pretty much it. That's the only bad thing that he has done, but so far, he's doing a great job. But my God, like, if there's one thing that you want to, like, if you guys can take from this, it's just a vote for Trump is a vote for hate. If you're going to vote for Trump, that means you are supporting the hatred of all Muslims, the hatred of all Mexicans, the hatred of all the other race, of the hatred of the LGBT community, the hatred of women. If you vote for Trump, you're voting for everything that is not white, that is not male, and that is not rich. That's basically the whole thing. A vote for Trump is a vote for hate. Now, I understand that some people are not fans of Hillary Clinton, and maybe she's going to do some bad things. You know, like, yeah, maybe she is not that good of a politician either. But at the very least, Hillary Clinton is the, you know, at least she's the lesser of two evils. If you're going to vote for Hillary Clinton, the worst that you're going to get is going to be, you're going to get a bad, you know, you're going to get a bad politician as the leader of the United States. And, like, you know what's going to happen, like, afterwards. Like, there, yeah, some bad stuff are going to happen, but not disastrous, you know? You know what to expect. And, like, they're, you know, you can go through it. But with Donald Trump, the worst thing that could happen is going to be World War III. And with the way that he's reacting and how literally every other, literally every other country is totally not in support with Donald Trump, considering how idiotic that he is, like, he's gonna start, like, eventually he's gonna go and start World War III. Like, the, like, down to the point that the only alliance, like, the only countries that would be in alliance with Donald Trump would be maybe Italy and Japan, because why not have history repeat itself? And, like, honestly, just don't vote for Trump. If you're, like, if you're in support for anything, like, any social issue that's going on right now, that rather it be race, rather it be for gender, rather it be for sexuality, you do not vote for Trump. And especially how he wants to bring in gun, like, especially how his solution for guns is to bring in more guns, is absolutely ridiculous. Because it's bad enough that nowadays, in the United States, guns have actually, like, guns right now have a lot more priority and they have more rights than actual freaking human beings. It's honestly ridiculous. This cannot freaking happen. If Donald Trump's answer to like gun problems, if his answer to like to tragedies that recently happened, like in Orlando and Dallas, if his answer is more guns, then we're gonna have a problem. Like, the stuff, like, If that occurs, if Trump is going to be president, then you really better get used to stuff like Orlando and Dallas to happen on a daily basis. So just remember, guys, a vote for Trump is a vote for hate. And if you don't want hate to happen, then just don't vote for Trump. And that is all that I've got for this week, so thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work at film-book.com, just search for Mathieu Brunet, or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. If you listen to this podcast on iTunes or another podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would be great. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button on our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening. And until next week, see you later, dudes.